Our next speaker is John Walker from UMC. Will be talking to us about From Plant to the Pump, how plant genome research at MU is helping to achieve bioenergy goals. John? There's the pointer up here.
Why is this not opening? There we go.
Great, thanks very much, and I'll try to be as sure as I can because I know you all want to go to lunch. I'm the director of the Interdisciplinary Plant Group at MU, and really the goal of the Interdisciplinary Plant Group is to cross traditional boundaries and to promote research. And just to kind of give you an idea of the scope of the group, we have faculty, about 54 faculty and probably 200 graduate students, postdocs, and technicians that span three different colleges and five different divisions and departments at MU. And we're always looking for additional people to participate, so if you're on other campuses and are interested in basic plant sciences, come talk to me. We'd like to have you be involved. The IPG faculty have diverse research interests, but what I'm going to focus on today are those that apply to bioenergy. And this is actually a slide you saw similar to what you saw earlier from Gary Stasi's talk. It's actually some pictures of some of the bioenergy crops that are being grown at one of the research farms in that bioenergy garden. But really right now there are two predominant alternative renewable fuels that are being used, and those are ethanol and biodiesel. And right now ethanol is coming predominantly from corn, and biodiesel is coming predominantly from soybean. And there's active research on the basic processes, developmental growth processes in both these plants. But also there's research in alternative crops, non-food crops that can also be used for biofuels. And so what I'm gonna do is just give you a few examples of some of the research that's being done on campus, going from some very basic fundamental research to more applied research, and then a couple examples of some new technologies that'll be useful for increasing the diversity of biofuels that can be used in the future. So just to kind of put this in perspective, this is some information from the Missouri Corn Growers Association. And so right now, Missouri's ranked 9th in the country in terms of overall corn production. There's 6 ethanol plants that are currently operating. Ethanol production in Missouri is about 75 million gallons. About 20% of the corn crop, at least last year, actually went into ethanol production. So clearly it's an important economic driver for Missouri farmers. And again, because of acts, Missouri state acts, about 70% of, in 2007, about 70% of all the gasoline fuels in the state were blended with ethanol. So that's predominantly 10% ethanol, okay? On the soybean side, as Gary already said, there's been long-standing interest in using soybean for a biodiesel fuel. So really, Missouri's considered the home of soybean biodiesel. In terms of national rank, we're 7th nationally in terms of soybean production. There's four biodiesel plants operating. There's been a tenfold increase in the amount of biodiesel from soybean produced in the last 3 years. So in 2005, there was about 75 million gallons nationally. In 2008, there was over 800 million gallons produced nationally. And in Missouri, there's about 90 million gallons being produced. Okay, so that just kind of gives you the perspective, the Missouri perspective, in terms of how important these biofuels are for our agriculture. Now back to the IPG, the Interdisciplinary Plant Group. Again, we have a broad set of interests, predominantly on the fundamental side, going from biochemistry and bioinformatics, plant pathology and physiology. And really what we're trying to do is apply all these range of technologies and interests to a variety of different questions that impact the plant sciences. And again, just today, I'll focus on those impacting bioenergy. So one of the first examples I want to give you is from Jay Thielen's lab, who's in the Division of Biochemistry. So he's using a combination of biochemistry, genomics, and proteomics, and plant physiology to understand the basic processes of how plants make these energy compounds. And he's in particular interested in oilseed production. And one of the kind of the themes I'll go over today is that what we're doing is we're looking at a variety of systems, and you're doing comparative studies across different plants or across different genomes within the same plant. So what Jay's studying is castor bean, soybean, and canola. They all have different advantages and disadvantages. And he's really looking at seed filling so that during that phase of plant development where the plants are producing oils and proteins that normally they would be used for storage purposes, but that what we're using them for is exploiting them. And he's really using proteomics, that is looking at the changes in particular proteins across this developmental time frame to really try to understand how you actually produce. Where does the carbon go, and how is it partitioned between starch, oil, and protein? So again, to try to understand the fundamental basics of the metabolism that's involved in producing these different compounds, so with the idea that eventually you should be able to manipulate those using either traditional genetic techniques, breeding techniques, I'll give you an example of that in a minute, or biotechnology applications. Okay, another example of, again, fundamental research in plant biology is from Bob Sharp's lab. Again, he's using a variety of approaches, looking at environmental interactions, using genomics and proteomics, and again, plant physiology. Sharp's lab is really one of the leading labs in the world in terms of understanding how plants respond to drought. Okay, and so one of the things that Bob is doing, this is actually in the greenhouse, is looking at different soybean genotypes, different types of soybean plants under drought stress conditions. So he mimics those by growing these plants in these long tubes, and he can mimic drought conditions. And one of the things you can see from this is you see that, and you probably can't see it from the back there, but just comparing two different cultivars, you actually get quite a bit of difference in terms of root biomass based on how much water availability there is, okay? And then what Bob is doing is actually looking at the physiological basis for that. And so what this is allowing you to do, not only to produce soybeans in under drought conditions, but also to be able to expand potentially not only soybeans but other crops to regions that normally you're not going to have good agricultural productivity. So again, that's the outcome of some of these very basic studies. Now, the Sharp group also collaborates with other groups, including Henry Wynn's lab. So Gary mentioned Henry earlier. Henry's the head of the National Soybean Biotechnology Center. And it's taken, again, a variety of different approaches, again, looking at environmental interactions, genomics and proteomics and genetics and plant breeding, and is studying many different things, including drought stress that I won't mention anymore, but he's also looking at changes that are looking at accumulation of different oils, both in terms of total oil content and then the quality of the oil. So he's using metabolic profiling and looking at changes in transcription factors, changes in the proteome to, again, try to get an understanding of the processes that are involved in both the production of oil, in this case in soybeans, but also looking at the quality of oils, because what you want is higher oleic acid. It gives you better biodiesel, gives you better flow properties, for example. Now, Henry also collaborates with plant breeders, in particular Dave Sleeper and Gordon Shannon's group, who are using more traditional breeding techniques and are looking again at very similar types of traits. And those traits include both total oil and also quality of oil in soybeans. And this is just an example of the kinds of things they're doing. What they're doing is exploiting the diversity within plant genomes. In this case, what they've done is they've crossed two different parents. One of those would be a traditional high-yield soybean line with an exotic germplasm, usually germplasm coming from wild soybeans. And you can see you get quite a bit of variability in terms of the oil content produced. And then what you do is you go back and you select for the traits you would want, in this case, higher oil content, and then do backcrossing and additional breeding programs to select for those and be able to put those into elite lines that farmers are going to want to use. Similar type of thing with oil quality. Again, this is looking at oleic acid content. Again, from two different parents, two very divergent parents were crossed, and you can see you get quite a bit of diversity, and what you do is, again, select for those traits that you want and put those into breeding programs so you can actually make those available to the farmer to use these out in the field. Okay, let me now switch from soybean and corn to what we're going to call new biocrops. One example is from Felix Frischi's lab, who again is a plant physiologist and is really looking at new crops for bioenergy. And again, Gary mentioned this already in terms of sweet sorghum. So sweet sorghum has been used extensively throughout the world for food crop and other crops, but it also has lots of potential as a potential biofuel crop. Traditionally or classically, sorghum is thought to be able to grow in a variety of different ranges. And what Felix is doing is a couple of different things. One is he's looking at it as a secondary crop for after you to follow up from wheat fields, okay? And then he's also looking at different ecotypes or genotypes, really, to look at how they grow in Missouri. In addition, although sorghum is well known to be able to grow in, under drought conditions quite well, what we don't know very much about and what happens in Missouri a lot also is under flooding conditions. So again, he's doing field trials under flooding conditions, again, to identify those genotypes of sorghum that can be used, again, as a potential biofuel, and is looking at things like sugar content and just total biomass under different kinds of field conditions. So again, it's a mixture of both basic science and more applied science. Okay, another important factor is not just how things grow out in the field, but we also actually know quite a bit about the basic biochemistry in terms of how plants convert energy into carbohydrate, fixed carbohydrates or fixed carbon, okay? And what Dale Blevins is doing, again, he's interested in looking at new crops for bioenergy, but is looking at really at the level of micronutrients and plant metabolism that's required for these plants to actually produce high levels of biomass. So this is just an example of the kinds of things that we can do. There are different types of plants basically fix carbon with different sets of enzymes, okay? So the way that corn fixes carbon is going to be different than switchgrass, which is going to be different than things like guinea grass, okay? They use different enzymes. And one of the key points here is that these enzymes all have different cofactors and all require different micronutrients. Okay, and so what Dale is doing is actually looking at the growth of these different types of, again, future energy crops under different growth conditions, in this case, varying the amount of magnesium that's in this hydroponic system. And you can see there's a really dramatic difference in the amount of growth relative to the amount of magnesium that's available. So this is going to be an important consideration when people take these new bio crops out to the field to have the right nutrient conditions that you can actually get good productivity versus lousy productivity. Several groups on campus are also trying to develop new technologies that'll be applicable not only to maize and soybean, but to some of these new bio crops. One of those is Jim Bartler, who's a maize or a corn geneticist and does molecular biology. And what he's doing is he's engineering what we're calling mini chromosomes. Okay, so chromosomes are the DNA that carry all the genes. And what he's using is he's targeting a special type of chromosome in maize known as a B chromosome. And he's making these into very small chromosomes that you can then stack multiple genes into. So basically, the idea is that these mini chromosomes are going to be really platforms for multigenic traits. So that's not only going to be important for, say, cellulosic ethanol production, where you may want to put many genes in, but you want to stack those traits on top of drought resistance traits, on top of disease resistance traits. So you're going to have multiple genes being put together, and these mini chromosomes are going to be platforms for those, which is going to make it easier to put all those traits together into viable crops. Again, whether that's corn, they're working on this technology for biofuel crops too. Missouri actually has one of the best plant transformation labs. Zhang's group over in the Sears plant growth facility is also developing new transformation technologies, in particular for, again, some of those biocrops, corn in this case, transformation technologies, again, to try to get cellulosic ethanol from corn, but also doing transformation in things like switchgrass and trees such as poplar. And so they're developing these pipelines so that whatever genes you're interested in or whatever mini chromosomes you want to be engineered, you can actually just plug right into this whole pipeline and create transgenic plants that will have the traits that you're interested in. And finally, Mel Oliver's lab. So Mel's part of the USDA ARS group, so again, that's a strong partnership on this campus, is also developing new technologies for bioenergy. In this case, what he's trying to do is engineer plants that, where if you introduce transgenes, you're going to have gene containment. And this approach not only gives you gene containment, but actually increases biomass. So basically what they're doing is they're developing switchgrass lines that have a desired trait, whatever trait you want to have. And in that background, they actually have a floral inhibitor, so something that prevents that from flowering. But in this line, that floral inhibitor is blocked. Okay, you have another line that has an activator for that floral inhibitor. So when you cross these two lines together, you get two traits that are valuable. One is you get vegetative growth only, so that's biomass, so this would be a biomass crop. But also because these guys don't flower, you're not going to be releasing potentially releasing those transgenic traits into the environment, so you get gene containment. So those are just a few of the types of examples of the kinds of things that are going on this campus in terms of basic plant research related to bioenergy. I'll just finish up with giving you a view of the IPG faculty. So this is the 50-plus faculty that are on this campus that are involved in this research. Thanks very much.